I'm Abigail Galvan tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Getting ready, the College of Cardinals prepares for the upcoming conclave, while a well-known name announces he will not participate. Major milestone, President Trump marks 100 days in office. We analyze how religious groups view his performance. Election win, Mark Carney and the Canadian Liberal Party cruise to victory. We take you inside the results. Plus, a major celebration. We take you inside the Jubilee of People with Disabilities in Rome. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, we're learning more details about the start of the upcoming conclave. You'll remember it begins next Wednesday, May 7th. Today, we learned the date will start at 10 a.m. with the votive mass for the election of the Roman Pontiff. Then at 4:30, the cardinal electors will pray the Litany of Saints, then entering procession into the Sistine Chapel. The mass, the prayer service, and the procession will all be aired right here on EWTN. We also learned today that a controversial cardinal will not participate in the conclave. Cardinal Giovanni Angelo Becciu made the announcement today, saying his decision comes out of respect for the Pope and for the peace of the conclave. Becciu was forced by Pope Francis to resign as prefect of the Congregation of the Causes of Saints in 2020 due to allegations of financial misconduct. Meanwhile, prayers continue for the Pope as cardinals celebrate the fourth Novendial Mass at St. Peter's Basilica. Today's celebrant, Cardinal Mauro Gambetti, quoted Pope Francis in the homily.
Everyone are called to live in the Church. Never forget it.
This was the fourth of nine Masses held for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis in St. Peter's Basilica. During this time before the conclave, there are more than 200 cardinals in Rome, along with 129 cardinal electors. As you can imagine, everyone is busy at work, preparing and praying for the election of the next pope. Joining us now is Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President of EWTN News, and Edward Penton, the Catholic Register's Senior Contributor. It's good to see you. Can you tell us, what are the cardinals doing each day?
Well, each day, the cardinals are gathering what are called the general congregations. That means that all of the cardinals, not just the electors, but also the non-electors, are meeting to do two basic things. The first is to handle any day-to-day administrative needs that have to be done for the caretakership of the Church in this interregnum with the Holy Father deceased. But then the other part, and the major part of their job, is to begin really preparing for the conclave. And that means getting to know each other, listening to each other, and going over all of the rules for a conclave, because they have to follow things very precisely in the conclave that's coming up.
And do you have any sense about what they were talking about today?
Yes, we got a sense they were talking about the issues related, of course, to the Church and to different global issues. I spoke with Cardinal Ribat of Papua New Guinea, who was telling us that they were talking about various issues about the challenges facing the Church, also what Pope Francis had done and what legacy has left and what they're going to do to tackle that. They talked about synodality as well. So various issues they were talking about.
And we've been hearing a lot about the Vatican stamps. Can you tell us, what is the significance?
Yeah, well, the Vatican, of course, sells stamps. It's partly because they are a functioning state. Now, the Vatican City State does exist as an actual state. And, of course, states have mail. States want to send mail. So stamps, obviously, then are part of that. The Vatican also sees this as a helpful fundraising mechanism, but it is also a way of giving tourists and pilgrims an opportunity to send mail back home when they visit one of the great places like St. Peter's Basilica or the Vatican City. In this case, it is a set of stamps marking the sede vacante. They obviously are very rare, and among stamp collectors or philatelists, this is an important little stamp to have to add to your collection. So there's that novelty as well. Certainly, as word has spread that Vatican stamps for the sede vacante or the interregnum are available, people are starting to flock to the Vatican post office.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. The College of Cardinals is thanking the religious and political leaders who attended the funeral of Pope Francis. In a statement released earlier today, the Cardinals said in part, quote, their presence was particularly appreciated as a participation in the grief of the Church and the Holy See, and as a tribute to Pope Francis's unceasing commitment in favor of faith, peace, and fraternity among all the peoples of the earth. The Cardinals also thanked the thousands of teenagers who attended the funeral and the civil authorities who worked so hard to make it possible. Over the last 2 days, the ninth major jubilee event gathered thousands of people with disabilities in Rome, an event that not only celebrated faith, but an opportunity to raise awareness about the dignity of all human beings. Catholic News Agency's Rome correspondent Courtney Mares spoke to some pilgrims at the Vatican.
As we continue to mourn the loss of the late Holy Father, the Jubilee of Hope goes on. I'm currently in St. Peter's Square, where one of the most beautiful jubilees of the Holy Year is taking place, the Jubilee of People with Disabilities. Wheelchairs rolled across cobblestones, and walking aids clicked on the marble floors of St. Peter's Basilica as people with disabilities passed through the Holy Door for the Jubilee of Hope. Thousands of participants have taken part in the two-day event, hailing from more than 90 countries to celebrate faith, hope, and human dignity.
Prego per un mondo migliore.
I pray for a better world. I pray for a world where inclusion becomes a normality. I'm blind from birth, but for me this is not a problem. I don't experience it as a problem. I experience it rather as a possibility, because I look at the world with different eyes.
Il mondo con occhi diversi.
È bella! Poi vedi tutto il giubileo. Poi vedi tutto il giubileo, Piazza del Popolo, Roma, il Colosseo.
Participants in the Jubilee had the opportunity to have their confessions heard by priests specifically trained to work with people with disabilities, and time to adore the Lord in Eucharistic adoration.
Prego Dio. Perché per il nostro Papa, Papa Francesco.
The Martena family from Lecce shared their joy with other families at the Jubilee.
Our family is a very close family, and we love each other very much and are happy. I have children who are jewels.
Michael, a Romanian man with Parkinson's, lives in the homeless shelter established by Pope Francis. He remembers meeting the Pope last year.
I tell him, pray for me because I have a delicious Parkinson, he put the hand on my head and he cried.
On the first day of the Jubilee, Archbishop Rino Fisichella, the pro-prefect of the Dicastery for Evangelization, presided at a mass at the Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls. He prayed that Pope Francis's legacy will give everyone the courage not to remain silent, and that his example of mercy and inclusion may continue to flourish in the Church.
The most important thing is that we are people like everyone, and we do the same things, but yes, we need a little bit of help. We need to be helped, but together we can do all the things we want to do. And nothing is impossible. If you want to be somewhere, to do something, you can do. And the disability can't stop you.
In Rome, Italy, Courtney Mares, EWTN News Nightly.
We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. 100 very special days. What religious groups think about President Trump's first 100 days back in office. And how are Republican lawmakers marking the moment? We're breaking it down. To Today marks 100 days of President Donald Trump's second term in office. The president calls it 100 very special days. One of his major goals since Inauguration Day back in January, the upending of global trade and imposing tariffs on countries around the globe. He says it's to bring more money, fairness, and prosperity into America. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
President Trump's trade and tariff plan has been both praised and criticized. He says very soon the U.S. will be making a fortune. He adds that the economy is doing great. And on his way to Michigan today, he told reporters this regarding India.
India's coming along great. I think we'll have a deal with India. The prime minister, as you know, was here 3 weeks ago, and they want to make a deal. We'll see what happens.
Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt tells reporters this has truly been the most historic start to a presidency in American history.
After building the greatest economy in the world in his first term as president, President Trump is in the process of doing that all over again. The American people trust in President Trump.
And the Trump administration trusts in tariffs, believing they will bring back American manufacturing and generate substantial revenues. Along with Leavitt in the briefing room, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
And the actual data has been quite good. The job data is good. Americans keep spending. And as Caroline said, we have these incredible commitments to bring manufacturing back on shore with record investment by domestic corporations and foreigners who want to come into the U.S.
The Trump administration raised tariffs on goods from China to 145% in early April.
Remember that we are the deficit country. They sell almost five times more goods to us than we sell to them. So the onus will be on them to take off these tariffs. They're unsustainable for them.
China's leaders downplay the potential impact. They say they have the capacity to protect jobs and limit damage from higher tariffs. Meanwhile, Americans' confidence in the economy now at the lowest level since the onset of COVID-19, as worries about the impact of tariffs take a heavy toll on consumer expectations for future growth. Leavitt says her boss is America's businessman in chief.
And that's why these trillions of dollars in investments are flooding to our country. The business community is bullish on America because President Trump is back in charge.
And on this day 100 tonight, President Trump is holding a rally in Michigan, his largest public event since winning back the Oval Office. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Republican lawmakers are also marking the first 100 days of President Trump's term, kicking into high gear their efforts to pass his agenda. Committees are meeting to write up their portions of the bill and making big decisions on what programs to fund and cut. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest. Eric?
Good evening. There is a sense of urgency to get President Trump's agenda across the finish line in the next few weeks. This week, seven committees are marking up the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, and then another four will do their work next week. Then the Budget Committee will merge it all together and try to pass it on the House floor. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he met with President Trump again today and assured him Social Security and Medicaid benefits will not be cut.
We're going to preserve the programs. We're not gutting Medicaid. Reduce fraud, waste, and abuse, which every single American should be applauding. The Democrats should as well, but they're not allowing themselves to do it.
But Democratic leadership says the GOP math doesn't add up without massive cuts in benefits.
They want to end Medicaid as we know it. They're going to hurt children, hurt families, hurt seniors. People will die. This is a matter of life and death.
The fear-mongering to a very small percentage of vulnerable people is disgusting, and they should be ashamed of themselves, but it's politics, so they're not. And the only people talking about cutting Medicaid and Medicare are some very liberal Democrats.
Republicans say priorities for the package would be to make tax cuts permanent. No tax on tips, on Social Security benefits, or overtime.
The good news is that, you know, the $2 trillion that we promised American people, I think we'll meet them. Is that enough to solve the $37 trillion problem? No. But it's a step in the right direction.
Freedom Caucus member Congressman Chip Roy tells me it's time for Congress to deliver and get federal spending under control.
You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't come here and just cut taxes and then talk about balanced budgets and never do it.
The timing here is tricky. There are still a lot of internal disagreements among Republicans on policy choices and the amount of spending cuts. Speaker Johnson says he hopes to get the House version passed by Memorial Day. Even Republican leaders say that's an aggressive timeline. I'll stay on top of it. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
As President Trump hits his 100-day mark, voters have indicated they are unhappy with the president's overall performance so far. In a Fox News poll conducted April 18th to 21st, shows 44% approve of how the president is doing leading the nation, while 55% disapprove. As you can see, a number of other polls released in the past few days show the president's numbers are falling. Of those who responded to the ABC News Washington Post, 42% approve, while 55% disapprove. That almost mirrors the New York Times Siena College poll and the Reuters Ipsos poll. CNN has a slightly larger gap, but the biggest one is the AP NORC poll, with only 39% approving of the president's overall performance, while 59% disapprove. The Pew Research poll had similar findings on the president's overall approval rating, but the data varied when it came to U.S. religious groups and their views on the first 100 days. They found the president's approval rating remains high among Christians, why evangelical Protestants are among the president's strongest supporters, and there is a divide among Catholics. The study says 72% of white evangelicals approve of the way Trump is handling his second term. White Catholics approve by 51%, but 73% of Hispanic Catholics say they disapprove of his job so far. For more, we turn to the author of that study. Chip Rotolo is a research associate for Pew's Religion and Public Life team. He also has a doctorate in sociology from the University of Notre Dame. Chip, thank you for joining us. Did anything in this study surprise you, and what stood out the most to you?
When it comes to the U.S. public overall, about 40% of Americans say they approve of how Donald Trump is handling his job as president. But one really striking finding is that this varies significantly across religious groups. So at the high end, about 7 in 10 white evangelicals say they approve of how Trump's handling his job. At the low end, clear majorities of Hispanic Catholics, Black Protestants, and religiously unaffiliated Americans say they disapprove of how Trump is handling his job. And among white Catholics and white non-evangelical Protestants, we see a roughly equal split between approval and disapproval of Trump.
Now, we just hit 100 days of the Trump's administration today. Looking at the number of how religious groups view him, can you compare that to how they viewed him in the first 100 days of his first term and with President Biden's first 100 days as well?
The numbers we see in this new April survey, as well as some that we saw earlier this year in Trump's first month, are almost identical to what we saw during Trump's first term as president. This is true not just among the U.S. public as a whole, but also among specific religious groups. Now, when it comes to approval ratings of Biden at a similar time, we tended to see much higher numbers. So in April of 2021, Biden's approval rating was at 59% compared to Trump's of 40% now. And when it comes to specific religious groups, we saw an opposite pattern with Biden compared to what we see with Trump. So religious groups that tend to approve of Trump now tended to disapprove of Biden during his presidency, and groups that disapprove of Trump now tend to have approved of Biden during his presidency.
And as we mentioned, there is a huge divide between white Catholics and Hispanic Catholics on the president's first 100 days. Can you take us inside these numbers, and do any other religious groups have a similar disparity?
Yeah, so on almost all of these questions, we see roughly equal splits for white Catholics. There's no question where white Catholics have a strongly favorable or unfavorable view of Trump. But across these questions, Hispanic Catholics lean towards unfavorable views, sometimes highly unfavorable views. This is not particularly new, and we see it on a lot of questions we ask. We know that white Catholics tend to be a majority Republican or Republican-leaning group, and in recent years, they have become even more Republican. On the other hand, Hispanic Catholics are a majority Democratic group. And one other thing that could factor into some of these questions is immigration. We recently found that upwards of 4 in 10 Catholics are immigrants or children of immigrants. And among Hispanic Catholics, 8 in 10 are immigrants or children of immigrants.
Chip, thank you so much for being with us today. Chip Rotolo, Research Associate for Pew's Religion and Public Life team.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the results are in. Prime Minister Mark Carney wins big and signals a shift in ties with the U.S. We'll discuss. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has led his Liberal Party to victory in Canada's pivotal election. Speaking to supporters following his win, Carney warned the relationship with the United States will not be the same.
Our old relationship with the United States, a relationship based on steadily increasing integration, is over. The system of open global trade anchored by the United States, a system that Canada has relied on since the Second World War, a system that, while not perfect, has helped deliver prosperity for a country for decades, is over.
Carney added that he will keep in place Canada's retaliatory tariffs on the United States, but added that if they expand, it will hurt Canadians more than it would pressure the U.S. Meanwhile, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre lost a seat in Ottawa, but vowed to remain as leader. Joining us now is Brian Dykema. He is a public policy analyst and the president at Cardis. Let's talk about how this race played out. Just a few weeks ago, it looked like Poilievre was headed for victory. What changed?
Well, I think what has changed was that the American president started imposing tariffs upon Canada, and one of the most fruitful and the most balanced trade relationship perhaps in history, and also started speaking of Canada as the 51st state. And I think what that did was it shocked a lot of Canadians, and it allowed the Liberal Party to transfer the focus of the election away from its record, which has been severely critiqued, its record of the last 10 years, and onto concerns from Donald Trump and the American state. And I think that fundamentally flipped an election from one that was going to be fought on the record of the Liberal government over the past 10 years to one over stability. And I think many Canadians chose to opt for stability and somebody that they thought was a known commodity over what they were concerned about, which was instability. So I think, I really do think it was a question of an election based on fear and stability versus one of the past record of the current government and what might the alternatives be.
And as we mentioned, Carney seemed to acknowledge that Canada can only go so far with retaliatory tariffs before they start hurting the country. Do you think Carney will be able to make a deal with President Trump?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to acknowledge that President Trump's imposition of tariffs is actually based on a lie. I think it's important it noted if he looked at the language he used, he based on an emergency. That is fundamentally untrue. There is no emergency, and therefore it is a breaking of a contract that he himself signed. So I think that's important to note. I think we are going to have to negotiate with the United States, and I think we are going to have to do some work to do that. I think what you notice, though, in Carney's speech when he said it's over and the trading relationship is over, I don't think it is. I certainly hope it isn't, but I also don't think it is. I think there are lots of reasons to believe that it's not over, but that it has received a fairly significant wound and blow from your president and something that we're going to need to recover from. I do think that it has changed. I think the global liberal order has changed a little bit, but I don't think it's over. And I think that that's what you're hearing there is a little bit of the fear that Carney was banking on to get him into power. I think there's a need for change, there's a need for restructuring, but it's not over. It will be one that's changed and that looks different than it currently does, but it's one that's going to continue and hopefully make both of our countries, and particularly the poor and the working class in both of our countries, more prosperous, as it has done for decades and decades.
Other important issues in Canada include challenges to the fundamental right to life, specifically the expansion of assisted suicide. What is Carney's stance on this issue, and what could these election results mean for the fight for life?
Well, I have great concerns about that. I think Mark Carney's stance is out of step with his professed Catholic faith. Mark Carney professes to be a Catholic, and this is one area that I think he could lean into his faith and lean into doing policy from that, because it aligns not just with his own particular faith, but aligns with reality And it also aligns with what Canadians want. Many Canadians, in fact, a majority of Canadians, from research that we at CARDIS have done with Angus Reid Institute, are deeply concerned about the expansion of euthanasia, the euthanasia regime in Canada, one that we heard even this week has been offered to military veterans, that is increasingly becoming something that's offered to people with disabilities. And I think if the Carney government wants to do something good that is possible, that would be helpful for all Canadians and would actually lead to the culture of care and solidarity that he spoke about during the campaign, he could start by reversing some of the expansions of MAID that we've seen now. Canadians agree with it. They want to see it. And to start reinvesting in things like palliative care and to allow a variety of institutions, including Catholic hospitals like St. Paul's and others, to continue to deliver the care that Canadians want. Most Canadians want to die at home, in comfort, surrounded by their loved ones. Currently, the Canadian medical regime is opting to move more and more towards MAID. It's increasingly becoming a choice for many people. It's one of the fourth leading causes of death here in Canada. And I think if Mr. Carney wants to lead and to lead well as Canada's prime minister and build the national solidarity that he spoke so well of and wanted to inculcate throughout the course of his campaign, this would be perhaps the best place for him to start.
Thank you, Brian, for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Abigail Galvan. Good night and God bless.